The Anton Savage Show
with Kearys.ie
on News Talk.
Now, Neil Delamere.
How are you?
Good. Resentful.
Wow, what a beginning to our therapy session.
I'm resentful because of the nature of your beard. Because right? I believed when I was about 15 or 16 that facial hair was a progressive thing and that as an older man, I too could have a significant beard.
Yes.
But I reached a ceiling at about 17 and I never went beyond it.
Okay.
So I cannot achieve the sheer level of, you have a turf. Like it's multiple layers. It is manly beyond compare.
I have never been introduced like that before.
Sometimes it's very manly.
They read your CV. I like the way you say achieved, as if I have sat at home and somehow studied this like at a horticultural level or something.
Oh,
like
you
that.
Clearly have a Clippers with the set level. You have. You've reached that.
I have a number two and a Clippers.
See, I told you.
I knew you. I knew within a minute you would get to this, the mechanical engineering side of this. It would move away from the biology and it would get to what machine do you use. I grew it. I've had it for a few years now. So
yes, but I've seen it before, but it has now reached, you know when a lawn is very good? And you go, now I can fertilise it because it's strong.
Yeah.
It has that level.
Yes, it's actually fake. It's AstroTurf. I'm a load of overweight lads play on me twice a week. I know that's a weird sentence. That's the sentence that's going to be clipped, isn't it, from this show? I've just realised that now. No, I grew it. I've had it for 4 or 5 years, actually. I grew it because I did a mockumentary and they wanted me to look different than I would look on a kind of a panel show. And we'd be clean cut on a panel show and I grew a beard because we did this thing called Soft Border Patrol where there was this amazing company who made a TV, a mockumentary for called Scott Squad in Scotland and then went, we'll take the same idea and make a mockumentary about a soft border around the Brexit time. And they said, will you be in it? And I said, yeah, I'll be in it. I just want to have a go at acting, but not real acting because it's kind of, you know, you're playing a weirder version of yourself. You're not delivering lines as much as improvising stuff around a central kind of concept. And they said, will you look different? And I said, okay, I'll grow a beard. And I grew a beard. And my wife went, you're never shaving that beard.
Oh, your wife likes it?
No, yeah. But there's no need to sound so surprised, Anton. Yeah, no, she likes it. Yeah, she went, no, you're not shaving
that. Well, this gets a bit too intimate, but I've always wondered about what proximity to another person's beard is like, whether that's a positive or a negative thing. So that's why I'm intrigued that your wife is so positively disposed.
Well, I suppose it's automatic. It's automatic cheekbones and automatic chin, isn't it? A beard.
It does provide a lot of chin. You like, had a chin, though. I've seen your chin, and it is there.
No, I had several chins. I mean, I think that is the danger of it. But no, she goes, no, you're not getting rid of it. Yeah.
You mentioned panel shows.
Yeah.
You have recently done a panel show, which is my absolute favourite, not by virtue of the show itself, but because of its producer, who is John Lloyd.
Oh.
This is QI. I think John Lloyd needs to, we need to put a blue plaque on him and keep him in Aspect. He is the most amazing individual.
If people don't know John Lloyd, I interviewed John Lloyd once and you know when you go, I mean, you knew you were going to talk to me about today. You saw a picture of the beard. You went, that'll be the first 5 minutes. And then you went, I'm happy to improvise around facial and body hair from there on in. But John Lloyd, who is the kind of originator, I suppose, of QI, is the originator of everything that's been good in British comedy for about 20 years. So he's Blackadder. He's Not at 9 o'clock News. He's Spitting Image. He is QI. He was the host of the first QI. So it was meant to be, and I was talking to the producers afterwards, because I'm as into it as you are. I've always wanted to do two things. I wanted to do QI and I wanted to do Live at the Apollo. They were the two kind of, you know, milestones. And not necessarily, like, listen, nobody gets 10 million viewers anymore on the BBC because of the balkanization kind of content and all the rest. But, you know, they're the ones that you really wanted to do. And so I've been lucky enough to do the two of them recently. But Michael Palin, I think, was meant to be the host.
He would have been very good.
Brilliant host. What a brilliant host. And there was meant to be kind of a silly team, which is Alan Davis, and a very erudite kind of Oxbridge team that was meant to be Stephen Fry. And then at last minute slightly changed. And then, of course, Stephen Fry did it. And then Sandy Toksvig did it. So I did it two or three weeks ago, yeah. And
Is it intimidating? Because you know in The Commitments where he's in the bath and he's being interviewed by Terry Wogan?
Yeah. Jimmy Rabbit. Yeah, yeah.
I have that moment with QI. I imagine myself on QI and think I'd be very intimidated. Very bright and it's a very slick machine.
They're very slick machine. They're very nice. And the first thing they do is if you're brand new, Sandy Toksvig drives out a little car remote control and has a little fact in it, and you read the little fact out in front of everybody, and then that kind of gets them used to your accent and your mannerisms and all the rest, and then you get set with the audience. It's a really sweet, lovely thing to do. Yeah, she has an amazing partner book, so I once interviewed her as well, and she, during the moon landing, you will like this, was standing holding Neil Armstrong's secretary's hand.
Sandy Toksvig.
Sandy Toksvig.
But Sandy Toksvig is Danish, isn't she?
She is Danish. Her father was a TV presenter and producer, like Gay Byrne level of fame, but he was a newsreader, right, when there was two stations in Denmark. And you could go, he was on a tour of America driving around, you could go to Cape Canaveral as a normal kind of punter. And she was standing there, and there was a woman looking nervous, and she was 9. And she goes, "Why are you nervous?" And the woman said, "Because my boss is in the rocket." And she went, "I'll hold your hand." And she held her hand during the moon launch. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's worth the price of admission alone. Go back for a minute. What's the balkanization of content?
You know, balkanization is kind of...
No, I don't. You said that like, oh, we all know the balkanization of content.
Okay, I have a bet with my friend. Can I get certain words into it? Any Anton Savage interview. It's kind of the breaking up of, and, you know, so the Balkans obviously was former Yugoslavia under Tito and all the rest, and has split into various different countries. So balkanization means splitting.
And that's a thing that people say.
That is a verb.
Other people understand it.
Or I've invented it and I'm very clever. I don't know. And we'll have to tell you this in QI. There was a bit where each series is themed around a letter. So we were on V and we were doing Vulgar. And she mentioned Vespasian, who is the guy whose dynasty built the Colosseum. And to 4 days previously, I had not known anything about Vespasian. We had a guy on our podcast who had talked about Vespasian. And I bluffed like you wouldn't believe, Anton. I looked unbelievably clever. I believe that's the Flavian dynasty, Sandy, is it? Because there was Flavor Flav, who wore a big sundial, and there was Domitian and Vespasian, and completely winged it based on look from 3 days before.
Magnificent.
Yeah.
That's a challenge, though, because if you remember back in the early days, it's a bit like Hoist Gracie in the UFC, you know, way back when it was the way it used to be.
Yeah.
They used to have Rory Bremner a lot.
Yeah.
Rory Bremner does not wear his learning lightly.
Okay. Right.
Not Rory Bremner.
Rory McGrath.
Him.
Yes.
He had a sort of a broad welcome for his own insights. You know, and they're very good insights.
Yeah.
He just... And I'd say that's tricky, is known. Don't overcook this. Don't be the smart arse.
Well, the idea is, we had already done 45 minutes when I hadn't a clue what she was talking about. Oh, I think I'd established my own ignorance at that point very, very well. You don't ever want to shut it down. So do you know that whole improv phrase? Yes, and. Have you ever heard that? So in improvisation, when people are doing improv games and you go, what do you think is this cabbage you have in your hand? If I go, there's no cabbage there. What are you talking about? You're an idiot. The whole game then is shut down. Whereas if you go, look at this cabbage, and I go, yes, and opens everything. And I think it's the same idea in something like QI. You don't necessarily want to get the right answer immediately. You want to kind of, the phone is going around the houses, you know, which is sometimes when I say, if I do a quiz or something in the UK, so, you know, Mastermind's fine. But if you do Richard Osman's House of Games, you need to kind of curb the, I want to win. Because that's a big hairy chimp inside me. That's come on.
But it's double. I want to win. I remember ages and ages ago. You will no doubt have long since forgotten this, but we did a pilot for Thing.
Yes,
that was a panel program, and I was amazed because the first time I had been exposed to comedians doing comedic work.
Yes,
and there was a list of topics. We all knew, okay, we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about that. And what I watched was everybody furiously writing jokes, writing jokes.
Yeah.
So you, if you're on QI, I assume have the double competitiveness of A, I want to win with my Flavian dynasty crack, and B, I've gags.
Yeah, but just the joy is that they don't tell you what you're talking about. So it's not like
you still must want to land show. Gags, though. No.
Yeah, but how do you land gags if you don't know what you're going to talk about? So you have to sit there and go, okay, I've done a lot of these shows for a number of years. I know Alan Davis is very funny. I know Chris McCausland is very funny. I know Carvey Lloyd is very funny, and Sandy's very funny. And you just go with the flow. You have to be able to trust yourself to improvise as well, you know?
Well, you see, this is the thing with you. I remember there's a clip that I love of Louis C.K. where he's in the middle of the start of his act and somebody says, I love your boots.
Mm.
And he goes into a long explanation that says, there are two people in the world you don't talk to when they're working. Me and a pilot. Just stay quiet till I finish.
Yeah.
And nobody says anything thereafter.
Okay.
Whereas you're the opposite. You pitch heckle me. You pitch...
I do not pitch heckle me. I pitch... how are you? What's your name? What do you do? Which is an entirely different thing, because heckle me is, and also you talk to somebody in the front row, their body language shuts down. You go, I don't want, if they don't want me to talk to them, I've no interest in making anybody feel uncomfortable. But if you,
oh, do you not? Oh,
none,
I always thought
whatsoever.
That was
none,
the aim.
No, none whatsoever. So when someone says, oh, don't pick on me. I mean, I would say engage with rather than pick, but I genuinely don't want someone to not enjoy it. I really don't. And you do get an instinct after a while about whether someone is up for the crack or not. And then, like, but if you can improvise around that, you get great stuff because everything is individual and it starts a gig off and it's live and in the moment. And
is it not wild pressure? Because I would have thought, going back to that Louis C.K. thing, if you know I have an hour.
Yeah.
And I know how it runs and I know how to pitch this and I'm on top of it and it's home.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
I go, oi, randomer in the front, this could go anywhere.
I try to address them slightly more respectfully than oi, randomer. But yeah, but you do have the hour after the first 5 or 6 minutes or you have an hour and however long. So, I mean, you can always dump out of it, you know. But you always get, like I had a Siberian guy last night in the front row from Clane. Sitting beside a Lithuanian woman, and that was tense for a while. But we had the crack with it. I had a guy recently, and said to him, in the front row.
You mean a Siberian guy from Clane?
A Siberian guy from Clane, and Vlad is listening.
Genuinely. Vlad from Siberia,
Vlad,
living in Clane.
Vlad. And he had a piercing, and I was like, so you were your own impaler, Vlad the Impaler. Like, that's amazing. He was great crack. And I had a guy the other day, and I said, what do you do? And he really kind of, like, assertively went, oh, I'm a panel beater, and I do very well. And I went, okay. I thought the second bit was unnecessarily detailed, and I said, okay. And I said to his wife, I said, what do you do? She goes, I'm a driving instructor. I was like, that is a scam. That is clearly a scam, isn't it? So she's like, pull into traffic there. No, there's no need to check your mirrors or your indicators. Smash. Oh, no, we're going to have to get your front wing repaired.
I know
a very good panel beater around the corner. So you try and weave something from... And audiences are really intuitive. They know what's set up and what isn't. So, like, you know, you can't set those things up.
Do they?
Of course. Ah, no. Audiences are really, really bright.
I see people say this, where they say audiences can smell insincerity. And usually the person who says it is the most insincere person. It's like, you've gotten away with it.
Yeah. No, I think they do know if something is set up or not. Because, like, if you weave 4 or 5 different things together, I like when something goes right and you put it up online and somebody in the comments goes, they're plants. And you're going, I don't know if you know the margins we're working at here, but you think I paid 5 people to sit in the front row of an audience and I'm going to take that off the door. Door split? No.
Speaking of improving your margins, you are gigging in Vicar Street on May the 4th.
Mm.
Please tell me that date is a coincidence or get out.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, you're not you're not one of those Star Wars people, are you?
I'm not one of those Star Wars people. No. But if Star Wars fans want to go to Vicar Street, I mean, I was going to say force them, but I'm not going to turn them away. No, I did it before. It's the second date we're adding, and we're adding a date in Everyman. I'm basically doing all...
They're just showing off.
All the gigs
due
around.
Due to popular demand, I've had to add a second date.
I'll tell you what you'd really admire in terms of showing off. I did Manchester and Bristol last week, and I did it on the basis of, can I get home that night? And I left. I got off stage at 9:50 in Bristol, and I was on the 10:50 flight home. Like, rock star. It was a Ryanair flight, but I was like, if I can be at home in my own bed after touring, because this tour is a long one. This is like 100 and something dates. So if I can be at home, it's just like you have your life then, you know.
I thought you were meant to be living the rock and roll lifestyle of stand-up comedy. That's what it is. I just my own bed. I like my pillow.
I don't know if you've seen the rock. Have you ever been at a stand-up gig and the rock and roll lifestyle of Ireland? Yeah. Which topaz will I stop at on the way home? Will I get nuggets or selects? Oh, the drama. No, I mean, I do my gig, really enjoy the touring, and then... But that's the joy of being in Ireland, because, like, you meet the guys at, say, Montreal, or you meet them at Melbourne, the kind of international acts, and when they're touring, they're 4 nights in the Atlanta Chocolate or whatever they're doing, you know, whereas I was in a hotel last night in Clane, and there was, you know, 400 people there, and like I was at home at 5 to 11 watching Baby Reindeer. You know,
talk to me a little bit about the comedy fanhood in Ireland, because Theo Von is playing, I think, the Three Arena. I'm thinking, are there enough people who'd want to see Theo Von in Ireland? Is there a comedy fandom that is a broad church for comedians?
I think there is. Yeah, I think that's brilliant, because now what you have is people, there's no gatekeepers anymore in the same way. So when we started, you kind of had to have a man in a grey suit somewhere, either in a radio station or in a TV station. And it was usually a man in a grey suit who decided if you were on TV or not. And, you know, to get enough profile to tour, you would have to be on television pretty much, or on radio. And that's why we were trying to do that panel show many years ago.
Indeed.
And we got burned. Yeah, we got somewhere down the line with it. And, whereas now, basically, you can find your own audience. You do your podcast, or you do your...
Do you do it profitably? Is the money the same? I always got the sense that if you got the big TV gig and that led to touring, that there was big money in that, in a way that it's more difficult post the balkanization of content.
Now you're learning, you see. No, I think there's... Well, in Ireland, anyway, I mean, I don't know what the UK was like. Well, I have a fair idea, but... You got your income was from touring. Live work was always, because you were working for RTE or Virgin Media, and, you know, they have tighter purse strings than the BBC. And also, you wouldn't do 25 series of 20 episodes per series, you know. So, I think probably the money is greater in certain instances. Like for podcasts, for people who can crack it online, for people who can crack it on YouTube. That is a joy. Like, the example I would always use is Foyle Arms and Hogg. So Foyle Arms and Hogg, brilliant acts, right? Huge numbers all around the world. They were never on television in Ireland in terms of their own show. We got them into sketches that we did in documentaries, and they were amazing in The Vikings and St. Patrick and all the rest. But they never got their own TV show. And look how big they are, because there was a different route, you know? YouTube was then extant.
For a man who has dedicated his life to making people laugh, you'd be delighted by this text. Neil Delamere did a brilliant English grammar correction on BBC Radio 4.
I bet you I know what this is.
Just fab. So proud of him and the Irish school system all at once.
You know what that was? It was a guy who was fairly fair on the right. He was very... very towards the right, shall we say. And he was talking about immigration, and he said something about, I think there's a lot of people, and it was a Radio 4 audience. So if people don't know, if your News Talk listeners don't know, Radio 4 audience is kind of Guardian reading, and they're quite happy about their liberalism, you know. And he was talking, and he did this kind of impassioned speech about allowing less immigrants in. And I just waited and said, I can't believe you said that in front of a Radio 4 audience. And they didn't know what I was going to say. And I said, it's fewer immigrants. And it was delicious. It was 800 years of pent-up frustration for us.
Forget Live at the Apollo. Forget QI. That's the peak right there. If you want to see Neil Delamere live, and if you haven't had the privilege, I strongly recommend it. It is May the 4th, Vicar Street.
May the 4th, Vicar Street in Cork, Everyman. And they're all available on neildelamere.com.
That is neildelamere.com. Always a pleasure, Neil. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
For coming in on what is such a nice sunny Sunday, when I'm sure
you're a bit tired. I'm going to mow my beard now.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.